verse of Canto 8, Chapter 1 in the Geo Purport. So I'm going to read that verse and then a few more verses for this purport. I'll just recite the Sanskrit slowly. Sukta Vavacha Parikshitai Vamsa Subhadarayana Prayo Pavishthena Katasa Chodita Vavacha Vitrapani Nandhya Khashivam Udhamunina Tadasisma Trinvatam. Translation. Sri Sukta Goswami said, O Brahmanas, when Parikshit Maharaj, who was awaiting impending death, thus requested Shukadeva Goswami to speak, Shukadeva Goswami, encouraged by the king's words, offered respect to the king and spoke with great pleasure in the assembly of sages who desired to hear him. So this sounds like something that we read at the end of the first canto or the beginning of the second canto, but here it is in the eighth canto. This relationship of the speaker of the message and the receiver of the message is, like we discussed yesterday, very, very important. The qualification. It's very wonderful, and the reciprocation between the two is very wonderful. And the knowledge transmitted is also very wonderful. So here's a summary of chapter 2, canto 8, chapter 2, summary, during the first few verses. Prabhupada, right? The second, third, and fourth chapters of this canto describe how the Lord, during the reign of the fourth Manu, gave protection to the king of the elephants, as described in this second chapter, when the king of the elephants, along with his female elephants, was enjoying in the water. A crocodile suddenly attacked him, and the elephants surrendered to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for protection. In the midst of the ocean of milk, there's a very high and beautiful mountain that has an altitude of 10,000 yojanas, or 80,000 miles. How high do planes fly? 35,000 feet, like 5 miles. 80,000 miles. Some of the plans beside this one. This mountain is known as Trikuta. In the valley of the Trikuta, there is a nice garden named Rituvat, which was constructed by Varuna. And in that area, there's a very nice lake. One of the chief of the elephants, along with female elephants, went to enjoy bathing in that lake. And they disturbed the inhabitants of the water. Because of this, the chief crocodile in that water, who was very powerful, immediately attacked the elephant's leg. Thus, there ensued a great fight between the elephant and the crocodile. It was a long fight. Fight continued for 1,000 years. These are celestial years, not ours. Neither the elephant nor the crocodile died. But since they were in the water, the elephant gradually became weak, whereas the power of the crocodile increased more and more. Thus the crocodile became more and more encouraged. Then the elephant, being helpless and seeing that there was no other way for his protection, sought shelter at the Lord's feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, text 1, 2, 3 have no further order. We'll read up to text 4. Text 1. Trivedanta Goswami said, like your king, there is a very large mountain called Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas. And one yojana equals 8 miles of 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated. Text 2 and 3. The length and breadth of the mountain are of the same measurement, or 80,000 miles. How wide is that?
1,000.
1,000. That's north and south.
North and south.
80 times. It's bigger than South America. Even.
Yeah.
Even. North and South America. That's the base.
It's bigger than the circumference of the whole planet.
80,000. Mm-hmm. Really? What's the whole planet circumference?
I think 20, close to 30,000.
Close to 30,000. Wow. Big mountain. That's a big point. It's three peaks. Peaks. Which are made of iron, silver, and gold, beautify all directions and the sky. The mountain has other peaks, which are full of jewels and minerals, and decorated with nice trees, creepers, and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create a pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty of all directions. Next 4. The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by the waves of milk that produce emeralds all around the 8 directions, and then in brackets, north, south, east, and west, and the directions midway between them, all directions. Report. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that there are various oceans. Somewhere there is an ocean filled with milk. Somewhere an ocean of liquor, an ocean of tea, an ocean of oil, and an ocean of sweet water. Thus, there are different varieties of oceans within this universe. So, at least it's clear, it's not speaking of the ocean of milk that's suitably within the world. The ocean of milk, the difference within the universe. The modern scientists, who have only limited experience, cannot defy these statements. They cannot give us full information about any planet, even the planet on which we live. From this verse, however, we can understand that if the valleys of some mountains are washed with milk, this produces emeralds. No one has the ability to imitate the activities of material nature as conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I want to speak about Lord Jagannath, but I'll speak something about this and then we'll go there. This is the 8th canto, and the 5th canto describes islands and oceans and islands and oceans and islands and oceans that are in the circular configuration. We don't find, I'm unaware of, any piece of land surrounded by an ocean, surrounded by an inland, surrounded by an ocean, So one way to deal with that is just dismiss mythology, imagination, cute, but we don't think it's just very easy. That's one way to deal with it. Fiction. Then another way to deal with it is this is the Bhagavatam according to scripture. Amongst all of the scriptures, the Shrutis and the Smritis, the Bhagavatam is the emperor. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which is a summary of all the Vedas, and it's conclusive proof. But it's not fiction. It's not imagination. It's something that's beyond our experience. It's disclosing things beyond our experience. And it's also to say even things that are within our experience. The scientists don't have definitive knowledge of. If this wasn't Ratiyatra Day, I would spend about 20 minutes discussing silly things that scientists say. Ratiyatra Day, so nothing to do with it. I'll just mention one of them. I remember when I was in high school, in science class, we heard of the concept of continental drift. And you know what continental drift is? It's a theory that once upon a time, the continents were moving around. So like the big mountain ranges, like the Alaska mountain range, what happened was, the continental drift theory says, once upon a time, there was a big shift in the rock surface underneath, and this huge landmass went. And now we have this big mountain range from Alaska all the way down to Canada and Rocky Mountains, West Coast mountain ranges because of continental drift. And then once upon a time, Africa and Asia and Southeast Asia were all one place. But then it started drifting in there. You know, you have the Himalayan mountains and different land masses, they try to put the jigsaw puzzles together to make it one land mass that started to drift, and now we have what we have. So when I was in high school, we heard in science class, there is this theory, and then we heard rubbish, because, and we gave it a lead. And then that's the last I heard of it, and then I went to college, and then they graduated from college, and went on to become a movie. Then I read some article somewhere where it's no longer a theory. It's fact. And anyone that doesn't accept it, they're rubbish. It was only 15 years. And something that was rubbish is now fact, and that was just fact, it's now rubbish. And this kind of thing goes on all the time. All the time. And Prabhupada pointed it out. It goes on all the time. And that's what they conceive, what the seagull was canceling. How many species are there? Count them. Are they going to come up with the right number? They're finding new species, but still. Okay, so, but there's a definitive number. Prabhupada likes to refer to the verse in the Bhagavatam that spoke in numbers, how many aquatics, how many vegetation species, how many animals, how many insects, how many human species. And then he would say, it's not, it's not off by even one or two. It's very precise, definitive. In any case, the Vedic wisdom gives us, it's Shabda Praman, it's descending knowledge, and there are other options. Sense inspection. I can see, therefore I believe. But we know that our senses aren't perfect. We look at the sun. Anyway, without looking at it, we've heard these things. looks like a little disc in the sky, but so now he knows many, many, many times bigger. Going back in time, there's just another one. Copernicus. Many of you have heard the name Copernicus, Greek astronomer. And he said two revolutionary things. Prior to him, the cosmology picture of the universe, was geocentric. That is, calculations were made, astronomical calculations, and then in turn astrological calculations were made in terms of the Earth is at the center of the calculation, and planets are moving around the Earth. So Copernicus said, no, the Sun is at the center and the planets are moving around the Sun. Heliocentric, not geocentric, was the language. And then because he had a telescope, he looked at the Sun and said, the distance between the Earth and the Sun is X, and the size of the Sun is something, through this telescope. And it was revolutionary. You know, people bought into it, hey, Sun is the center. And then, in course of time, telescopes got better. And it turns out, fast forward over to today, where Hubble telescopes are mounted onto spacecraft, go zooming around the universe and take pictures and send signals back, pictures of things. And now the calculation of the modern scientist is getting closer and closer to the Vedic calculation of the distance between the Earth and the Sun, and the size of the Sun, and the size of the Earth. Now the Vedic calculations were done without technology, or without extending the senses, but the numbers were precise. And now, with technology, it's getting closer and closer. They're almost right. But still imperfect, because by nature the senses are imperfect. And I'm going to do this one thing. You've got to watch when I use my hands. The conclusion of what I'm about to say is motion is relative, right? Relativity of motion, one object in relation to another object. Like when you're sitting in a train, and you look out the window of the train. Is the landscape moving or is the train moving? Landscape is staying still. And you're moving in the train. But you look out the window, it looks like the landscape is moving. It's just relativity. Looks like. So, the Vedic picture does not disallow the fact. The Vedic picture accepts the fact that planets are moving around the Sun. It's a fact. Planets are moving around the Sun. But the calculation, the astronomical calculation, can be calculated either way. Just the equations are different. You plug in the numbers and you get the right calculation, the distance between the Earth and the Sun. Relative motion. So, we're still in the northern hemisphere, right? The equator is below us. Yes?
I think we're
right through. Diana?
7 degrees.
Okay.
We are equator is 7 degrees.
Okay. For those who live in the northern hemisphere, here's the Earth planet. This is the Earth planet. And in the winter time, January 14th, is winter solstice. It's where, in the northern hemisphere, where the nights are longest and the days are shortest. Yes? But the Sun is moving in relation to the Earth. From that point, just like these are days parting, as the Sun was moving towards the north, or as we find in Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, the Sun moves towards the north. The Sun moves on a orbit around the Earth, and then it crosses the equator, where the days and nights equal. And it goes to the summer solstice, where the days are longest, because the sun is in the northern hemisphere, and the nights are shortest. And then it crosses the equator, where days and nights are equal, and it goes down to winter solstice. So, in the course of 1 year, the sun moves. The Earth is moving around the sun. That's a fact. And the sun is moving around the Earth. That's also a fact. And they're not contradictory statements. So here's the sun. The Earth is moving around the sun. And that takes place in 24 hours, day and night. That's one depiction of the motion of the relative motion of planets. There's another one, because the Earth is tilted on an axis, 23.5 degrees or something like that. So as the Earth is moving, in the course of 1 year, relative to the Earth, the sun is moving from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere as it moves around. So the Vedic picture is calculating the motion of the sun. Absolutely, it's called an ecliptic. You study in ninth grade science, that's what it's called. The ecliptic, or the ecliptic plane, the plane of the motion of the sun as it moves around the Earth in 1 year. You can, I mean, if you sit in one place and look at the position of the rising of the sun, I'll just do this from Vrindavan, if you're from Vrindavan. There's a very nice place in Vrindavan called Vrindakund, where Itkan, Dina Bandhu in particular, a member of his son, has taken responsibility for Vrindadevi, the deity of Vrindadevi, who was the deity was gifted to him by a sadhu to take care of. So as you're looking in the easterly direction when the sun rises, you see Nandagram. There's a hill where Nandamaharas live. And in the summer, the sun rises towards the north as you're looking east. But as the season passes, the motion of the sun goes further south, further south, further south, further south, further south, further south. Further south. And then back again, further north, further north, further north, further north, further north. So in relation to the Earth planet in the northern hemisphere, there's a motion of the sun that moves once a year from orbit around the Earth because of the axis of the Earth. Now, there's not only the conception of these relative motions. This is brought up in Srimad Bhagavatam. Please bear with me. I'll go to Jyotgaur Jagannatha quickly. Shukadeva Goswami explains these two things. Maharaj Triksha goes away. First you said the Earth is moving around the sun, then you say the sun is moving around the Earth. Can you explain these sound contradictory? And he gives a really simple example. Here's how to understand it. Picture, Shukadeva Goswami says, a potter's wheel. Maybe some of you have seen a potter's wheel. They make clay pots. They put a lump of clay on a wheel. And the wheel spins, and they move their hands and, make a pot. And they pull the pot up and make a little bit of the pot, decorate it however they want to shape it. From that circular motion. So he gives the example of a potter's wheel and says, imagine there's an ant on the potter's wheel that's walking counterclockwise. And you can say he's walking counterclockwise. But the wheel is spinning clockwise. So you can also say moving clockwise. He's moving very fast clockwise, but he's still walking counterclockwise. And they're not contradictory. So if you, it's a simple explanation for something that's sophisticated. If you look from above on the plane of the ecliptic, what's at the center? The Earth is at the center. And what's happening is the Sun very slowly, like the ant, very slowly is moving in a counterclockwise direction. Very slowly. It takes a whole year for that Cotter's wheel, the ecliptic to turn. But simultaneously, in relation to just the plane of the ecliptic, the Earth is spinning once every 24 hours, a complete circular motion. So, the motion of the Earth in relation to the Sun is it moves around the Sun every 24 hours, and the Sun moves around the Earth every 365 days. We'll do just one more thing. We'll map the planets, let's say Venus or Mars, or, you know, Saturn, pick your favorite planet, as it moves around the Sun. And the Sun is moving. 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 So what's the graph look like? It's a spiral. Yes? The motion of Mars moving around the Sun as the Sun moves around the Earth. And then fast forward and do it like a million times. So what do you get? You get a disk with an outer perimeter and an inner perimeter. Yes? Three-dimensional is like an inner tube. The two-dimensional, it's a disk with an outer dimension and an inner dimension. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam gives those outer dimensions and inner dimensions in terms of the land mass, where there's an ocean in between, and then a circular ring, and then another ocean, and then another circular ring. It's the inner orbit and the outer orbit of the various planets as the planets are moving around the Sun and the Sun is moving around the Earth. And the numbers are nearly a one-to-one match with what modern scientists say. Are you with me? Now, how did they get all that information? They didn't have Hubble telescopes and rocket ships and pictures sent back to scientists. They didn't use sense inspection. They didn't use logic and reason. They used another system, descending knowledge. And which is more perfect, descending knowledge or sense inspection or logic and reason? Our statement is descending knowledge. Is you get knowledge from a perfect person, you've got perfect knowledge. You use your senses and you're going to get something less than perfect. Or just plain wrong. The Vedic wisdom is not clear. It's not mythology or speculation or poetic, you know, creative writing. It's transcendental knowledge. As with astronomy, so with time, and so also with events in the universe. We don't have the capacity to know what's going on in other parts of the universe. Ask the modern scientists, there's no life in the universe except this one. Maybe Mars, if they found some water. Maybe. But that's it. We're it. We're at the center. That's not the basic picture. Now, which one do you want to take? The sense perception one, and mental speculation, extrapolation based upon sense perception one? Where continental drift was a fiction, whoops, no, now it's a reality. That one? Or one where knowledge is descending. Our system is knowledge is descending. So we're hearing some percentage knowledge here. Kama Shukadeva Swami was not interested in fairy tales. He's telling history. So there was a king who was cursed to become an elephant. He became an elephant in a place where there's an ocean of milk. It's in the heavenly regions. Where dimensions, this is a whole other thing. Dimensions in the heavens, just like time is different, space is different. Time is different, correct? You with me? Time is different when a moment of Lord Brahma, when he went and took the calves, the powered boys, and put them in the cave and came back. A whole year had passed. Correct? Time, relative time. So, space is also relative. In Einstein's model, time, space, continuum, that resembles what the Vedas say, that time moves matter, and time acts differently according to levels of consciousness. So, time is longer in the higher realms, and space is greater in the higher realms. We'll go down to like, little rocks. The place where I'm staying, there's a glass door that closes to keep bugs out. So we can close the door at night, we can see this out, open it up. And there's a whole row of little guys, little, I don't know what they are, little guys with wings. And they die. They just like lined up. Whole pile of them. And that their lifespan is maybe 48 hours. And they just expired. We just went to sleep, woke up in the morning. They passed for 100 years. And that's just here. Their 48 hours, our 48 hours is their 100 years. You follow? Time is relative, and space is relative. So these mountains that are so big, it's not fiction. It's the higher planetary regions where space is different as time is different. And there's an ocean of milk. Why not? As Prabhupada says, let the scientists prove it wrong. I'll just share this little Prabhupada. Maybe I'll not get to what I'm going to do. Morning walk in Vrindavan. One of some memorable moments of our founder Acharya. Those of you who have been to Vrindavan, you know what the Krishna Balarama here was. As you leave the temple, now it's on the right hand side of Prabhupada Samadhi. That wasn't there before, it was big fountain in the middle. And then keep going, and then there's the gate. Now on the other side of the gate is all this congestion and shops and noise and lobby stands and rickshaws and trucks and carbon monoxide and like clamors. But then there was nothing. It was just agricultural fields. And all that was really fun and peaceful. So Prabhupada was brought from his quarters through the main gate, make a right hand turn and take a walk down that road. And there weren't buildings like there is now, hotels, motels, and stuff. It was just fields. Very nice. And one particular morning, Prabhupada was in a feisty mood. He said, the scientists, they make their speculative claims, and then others are left to try to disprove them. So I can do the same thing. I have the following theory. He was taking the position of the scientists and saying, prove me wrong. He said, my theory is the moon has cool planes. Prove me wrong. He looked from under there and said, no one's going to prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Then he just went on to elaborate his theory. He said, according to Vedic wisdom, it's not just the light of the sun, it's the light of the moon that allows vegetation to grow. And Soma is the moon god, and he's in charge of vegetation. So we need the light of the moon. We need the light of the moon in order to make vegetation grow. So the moon also has flame. But we experience that the flame is, but the light of the moon is soothing. Therefore, cool flame. Prove me wrong. This is my theory. Prove me wrong. He just kept going on and on and on. And then he went back to, and this is what the scientists do. They say, such and such. And then the rest of the world is left to say whether, you know, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Like bullies, you know. I'm strong. This is the way it is. You want to challenge me? So, that's what's going on in the world of science, and as far as the Vedic picture of things, it's descending knowledge, and the descending knowledge creates a situation where we simply accept it. Like when Prabhupada was involved in discussions with people who, how do I know it's right? And Prabhupada said, because it's within the Vedas. Well, I don't accept the authority of the Vedas. And then Prabhupada said, well, I don't accept your authority. What's your authority? And I don't accept it either. So it's a stalemate. You don't accept my authority, and I don't accept your authority. And this is what I say. I'm the authority of the Vedas. A Brahmana has a qualification of cursing a king, and just on the strength of his cursing the king, he became an elephant. And who was the king before? You remember? No. The king before was King Indrajumna. Great king. There's different Indrajumnas, and the one who is connected with the story of Lord Jagannath is also named King Indrajumna, but he lived during Satya Yuga. And the whole description of the first appearance of Lord Jagannath and the first Ratnyat of Lord Jagannath is found in the Skanda Purana, the Purushottam Kshetra portion of Skanda Purana, in which the original carving of Lord Jagannath in Satya Yuga was described. And it's a long story. It can take about 2.5 hours to go into all the details. But a portion of that story was created by Mahakrishna Goswami in a drama called Jagannath Priya Natakam during our Rath Yatra in Chicago. The devotees in our congregation and temple performed Jagannath Priya Natakam. And it's a very wonderful story, and it shows the original carving of Lord Jagannath. And I'll just give you a little short capsule summary. But the connection is King Indrajumna. Here is King Indrajumna becoming an elephant. And this is another King Indrajumna, a different King Indrajumna, becoming responsible for the creation of Lord Jagannath. King Indrajumna lived on the western side, but here's India, and the western side of India is over here, and the eastern side of India is over here where Jagannath Puri is. So King Indrajumna was the emperor of the world. Very powerful king. Very pious king. But even more than pious, he was a pure devotee. And his intensity of devotion was so strong that he wanted to see with his own eyes, he wanted to see the personality of Godhead. And that desire became stronger and stronger and stronger. So what did he hear yesterday? When there is a desire to connect with Shreya Uttama, the ultimate benefit of the living entity, Krishna sends a representative. You heard that. So in Skanda Purana, Purushottama Chapter, it's described that Krishna sent a sadhu. There was an assembly of sadhus in the king's palace. He regularly gathered an assembly of sadhus.
On this particular occasion, he burst out with the outpouring from his heart.
Is there any of you great saintly persons, any amongst you who knows how I can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Please tell me. My kingdom is insignificant to me, it's meaningless to me, I just want this one thing. So one sadhu stood up amongst all the other sages and expressed, I have come to your kingdom just for this purpose. I have been to that place where one can see the personality of Godhead, who is named Nila Madhava. Nila is blackish in complexion. Nila Madhava. And I was there when he described the place. I was there and I stayed there for a long time, bringing to my heart's content, seeing with my own eyes the personality of Godhead. But I knew of your exalted nature. So I left that place just to come here and inform you, O King Indrajumna, how you can also find Nila Madhava and experience seeing the personality of Godhead eye to eye, face to face. The king was very happy. Just after the sage spoke, silently, no fanfare, he just turned and left the assembly. The king wanted to reward him, but he was gone. So he gathered together his ministers and asked them, what should I do? This is what a king does. He asked his ministers. And they decided that one amongst us should go first to the place where the sage had said and find out, like a little reconnaissance mission. So the most trusted amongst the ministers was selected. And I can't remember his name. Vidyapati. Thank you. So Vidyapati went, following the indication of the sage. So many details. He got to a place that matched the description, but he was a little surprised. Because in that area, there were only Kshatriyas. And Shabaras in Sanskrit means their occupation was they were pig farmers. Pig farmers. And he was introduced to the chief of the pig farmers, whose name was
Vishvabhasu.
Vishvabhasu, thank you. So Vishvabhasu, being the chief of the pig farmers, or the Kshatriyas, he received the minister very gracefully, properly. And a whole series of events, so many series of events. But he told Vishvabhasu the mission that he was on,
and he wanted to hide the Siddhi, the Bhagavata. Vishvabhasa didn't disclose anything. In course of time, many events happened. He married the daughter of Vishvabhasa because he's a king, although he's a Shudra. Kings can do like that, so they became married. And he noticed by staying in the house of Vishvabhasa that at night he would be gone. And in the morning he'd come back. And he smelled very fragrant smell instead of the other kind of smell. And he was bearing very special flowers. And so he asked his wife, you know, what's the scoop? What are you doing? She didn't want to say. But then eventually she said, he's going to worship with your mother. So he requested Vishvabhasa to show him Nilamadhava. And he didn't want to. And a little negotiation, and he agreed. But he had to wear a blindfold, so he wouldn't be able to go there on his own. But he was a minister, so he was smart. He carried a bag of mustard seeds, and as he was walking along the path, blindfolded, he dropped mustard seeds. So the danger of the mustard seeds would grow, and then he could find a path. So he got before the place where Nilamadhava was, and there was this beautiful being of Nilamadhava. He was overwhelmed with happiness. And he was thinking, now I can go back to King Indraduma and tell him. It's true what the sage said. It's a really long story. I mean, like so many details. So he went back to the house of Vishvabhasa. He made his journey back to tell King Indraduma. King Indraduma was very happy, more than very happy, was ecstatic to hear this true. And he wanted to immediately gather together his whole army and entourage. Long journey with many complexities, journeying, and many events took place. It's a very wonderful description. And eventually he passes through Bhubaneswar. Long description. He enters into Puri. And on the Niladri Hill, but when he gets there, the place is devastated. The sandstorm came and covered everything, and there's nothing left. Vishvabhasa was there. And Vishvabhasa blamed the king. All this misfortune came because of you, and blamed the son-in-law because of you, and all this misfortune, and my service to Nilamadhava was taken. He takes him to go see the deity, and he opens, and the deity is not there. The deity is gone. He cries and cries and cries. Very emotional, very spiritually emotional drama. Never seen this in life, but when Tamal Krishnamurti presented it, like every day, or mindful festival. I went every day and cried every day. Just like this. Very strong emotional drama. Only Kamal Krishna did it with the whole orchestra from Calcutta. Violin players and an orchestra player. The drama just really did it up. And it was like, it's supposed to see the author. The being's not there. And in the room is devastated, he wants to give up his life. What's the use of my life? I can't see the Lord of my life. Narada is with him, he encourages him, no, it was prophesied that this would happen. Please take courage, and like, restores his confidence. So many nice things. Then he is instructed by Narada to perform some yajnas, he performs yajnas, and then he's told to go take his bath in the sea, the ocean, and this wood comes and just touches his body and he becomes ecstatic. The wood carver is making the deity according to the indications that he's not supposed to enter, but he hears the carver stop and he gets all anxious. So he goes inside and he sees Lord Jagannath like this. And he thinks it's an unfinished form of the deity. Because of my being impatient, I went inside, and now the carver couldn't finish completing the deity. Narada consoles and says, no, 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 this is actually the form of, it's a long story, the form of Lord Krishna in Dwarka, feeling separation from the residents of Vrindavan. I'll tell that story this afternoon when I'm supposed to speak to them. I'll just tell that part of it this afternoon. Stay tuned. Coming attractions. It's very nice. But Lord Jagannath is Krishna in Dwarka, feeling separation from the residents of Vrindavan. Just like Rath Yatra, what is it? Lord Jagannath leaves the temple, big, opulent, grand, highly worshipped temple, gets on a chariot, and goes along grand road, like several miles, to a place called Kundisha. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita carefully, you'll understand. Kundisha is Vrindavan. So Lord Jagannath is going to Vrindavan. So the devotees that are pulling the cart are pulling Krishna from Dwarka to Vrindavan. He wants to go to Vrindavan and be with the residents of Vrindavan. And the way the festival happens in Puri is he stays in the Kundisha temple for some 9 days. And then there's another big festival, Doliyatra festival, where the goddess of fortune is in a huff. She's upset. My Lord Purushottama has left my side. So they put her in a talisman. The deity comes out of the temple, Lakshmi comes out of the temple, and all of her servants with sticks, they go marching down Grand Road and confront the servitors of Jagannath. And with sticks, they start to beat. It happens every year. The ceremony. They start to beat the servants of Jagannath. You return him. He's my husband. You return him now. And he says, yes, yes, yes. We'll return him. We'll come back tomorrow, the next day. And we'll be better for that. And they leave. But the ceremony, the ritual. And then the return procession, where Jagannath is placed again on the cart, and he goes back to the temple. All of this is described in detail, in Purushottam Kshetra, portion, Purushottam Khanda, portion of Skanda Purana. So, the Jagannath leaves her cards. And King Yudhishthira wants Lord Brahma to do the installation. He's a powerful king. So with Narada Muni, they go all the way to Lord Brahma's abode. But we know time is relative, right? So they go to Lord Brahma's abode. And he's busy listening to a concert. So they have to wait. And then by the time he's done, they said, please come. He said, I'll come. But ages have passed. He was supposed to build a temple. The temple was built. But the deity wasn't installed. So Lord Rama, Narada, and King Yudhishthira, they come back. And he's acting like he's a king, but many generations have passed. And he says, you know, what's going on? I'm the king around here. What's going on? And the king says, well, who are you? I'm the king. Wait a minute, I'm the king. I'm king of the universe. Oh, we've heard about this wonderful, great king for, you know, long ago. Well, I'm that king. Oh, well, I'm the king. But you want to have the installation? That's fine, let's have an installation. Lord Brahma did the installation.
detail jotted on the scribes how he wanted his worship to be done by King Dumna. And those instructions given to King Dumna are the same instructions followed today in the Jagannath Temple. And it's a little different than the kind of worship that we do, because we follow the Pancharatrika system of Narada, which is different than the Dandapurana description of Lord Jagannath. You know the history, perhaps, when Ramanujacharya went to visit Puri, and he saw what they were doing, and he said, "This is all wrong. Here's how you should do it." And at night, Lord Jagannath threw him some many, many, many miles distance with the indication, "No, I like this worship, the way that they're doing it. Don't change it." Because Ramanujacharya was a reformer. When people were just doing like hodgepodge, he corrected them. It was according to proper standard. And in that way, many very prominent temples that had become hodgepodge became standard. And still today, there are three Vaishnava temples, although their history goes back long, 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 before Ramanujacharya appeared on earth. But Lord Jagannath likes the worship by the shabaras. Those who were the pig farmers were given the special different duties by Lord Jagannath. You're in charge of this, you're in charge of that, you're in charge of the other thing. And they have their service. Which Vishwavasa was greatly distressed that his service from Nilamada would be taken. It wasn't taken, it was another deity form, the Jagannath deity form. The intimate services are there, passed on through generations. The sons accept the service of their father, worshipping Lord Jagannath. So like we read in, for example, we're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a certain group, like a family group, that they take Lord Jagannath from the temple with them on the cart. There's a certain group. That's their service. I mean, there's another group that, you know, they make the toothbrush and offer the toothbrush. I have one. They're like this long. There's a certain kind of tree. There's a certain, like, standard, and they make it soft at the end. And they offer that to Lord Jagannath. Some make the banners. There's a banner on top of the Jagannath temple. And it's way up there. The chakra is way up there. And they regularly change the banner. And there's a family that takes care of making the new banners, going up and taking the old one down and going up. And it becomes Jagannath Prasad. And there's some that are cooked, and there's some that do this, and some that do that. All that is described in the Sunda Purana, and they're following it. And Srila Prabhupada was there when he was a small boy with his father, and liked the worship of Lord Jagannath at Rathyatra time so much. We're going to discuss this a little bit in the afternoon, but he then wanted to do it in his neighborhood. His father made all the arrangements. Then when Prabhupada came to America, and he saw from a Pier 1 import store, little Jagannath deities, and instructed Shamasundar to make the deities, and then instructed Jayananda to make a cart, and they had their first Ramayana. And it was so successful that it was at them all over the world. Oh, that was very expansive. So here we are, the ego is where we are now today. Following the ecstatic worship of King Indumna. And that the first Ratiyatra was described there. From the temple that was built to the Lumbi Cha. And someday, hopefully, you'll get a chance to visit Jagannath Puri if you haven't already. And you'll see the main temple. They'll probably let you in. One piece of advice. Don't dress like a Hare Krishna ISKCON devotee. They may not let him in. Did you try? They wouldn't let him in? You just dress like, you know, like everybody else dresses. But
But they're intimate with us in detail. They have guards that said, I know some people from India that wouldn't let them in because their complexion is here. They're cut hard down. Yeah, and her mother. And Gulshan was speaking in, you know, five different languages. Hindi, Bengali, you know, Marathi. He said, no, no, no. You can't come in. Your complexion is too fair. Big argument, big crowd of people, you know, the guards can't come in. Anyway, Jagannath comes out of the temple once a year and gives his association to everybody. For 5 years. But they do what they do because they have their idea of how Jagannath wants to worship. So any, as